Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with best-selling author Jodi Picco, whose new book, written with her daughter Samantha Van Leer, is off the page. We'll also hear from Symphony Book Fair president Heidi Charters and Linda Ferguson, longtime book fair volunteer, about this year's book fair. And bookseller Candace Huber of Tubby and Coos Mid-City Bookshop tells us about the League of Extraordinary Readers. If you had a thorny ethical problem to deal with and you needed a writer to help you out, Jodi Picco would be a great choice. She's written about school shootings, gay rights, elephants and grief, organ donations, wrongful births, Asperger's, social concerns of all types. Her most recent novel for adults is Leaving Time. She's entertained and moved her readers through 24 books, several of which have been made into films, most notably My Sister's Keeper. And recently, Jodi's begun to take a bit of a different turn in her writing with two young adult novels co-authored with her daughter, Samantha Van Leer. The first was Between the Lines. The second is Off the Page. Jodi Picco, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to talk with you. It's about time you came to New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Now, let's talk about Off the Page. Tell us how this new writing adventure with your daughter came about in the first place.
Well, the first book, Between the Lines, was actually Sammy's idea. She was 13 years old, and I was on a book tour, and she called me up and said, I think I have a really good idea for a book. And I said, all right, let's hear it. She said, well, what if every time you closed the book, the characters inside it had lives and personalities different from the ones that they were in the book? And every time a reader opened the book, you went back to act one, scene one, and had to act it out all over again. And what if there was a prince in a fairy tale who was sick of being a prince in a fairy tale, but didn't really know how to communicate that until a reader on the outside, a 15-year-old girl, realized that this fairy tale she was obsessed with because the prince was illustrated so handsomely inside it was speaking back to her, that this prince was talking to her and wanted her help getting out of the book. And that really was the foundation of Between the Lines. Like I said, Sammy was 13 when she came up with it. I thought she was brilliant. I mean, who hasn't had a literary crush and wished they could come off the page to you? And I suggested that we write it together. And because she had a full-time job, she was a student, we wrote on her summers off. We wrote the book one summer, we edited the book a second summer, and then we toured three continents for it the third summer. And then Sammy went off to college, and we knew we had left some things hanging at the end, but we needed her to wrap her head around when she could come back to writing a sequel. And her freshman year, she called me up in the middle of the winter and said, I really miss writing. Maybe we could work on that sequel this summer. So that's what we did. Last summer, we wrote the book, and we edited it during her fall semester via speakerphone from 10 to 12 midnight every night. And now we're out on tour for it, and it's a lot of fun. It's been a great joy to write with her and really to learn from her what it means to have a co-writer.
And isn't it great to have your daughter want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, you know, it's funny. If you ask her, do you want to be a writer? She will actually say, God, no, it's too hard. You know, and she's getting a degree right now in psychology and human development. She'll graduate with certification to teach elementary school as well. Yet, if you ask her, are you going to keep writing? She'll also tell you about all the ideas that she has for chapter books and children's books. She is a writer. Whether she chooses to become a published writer, that's going to be up to her.
Well, if she's been working from 10 to midnight every night for a while,
well,
she's
that.
Got discipline.
When we wrote the book, we were writing from 9 in the morning until 5:30 at night, side by side, all summer.
Now, I have to wonder if this isn't somehow freeing for you to go from the social realism that so distinguishes your other fiction to this kind of fantasy life that forms, you know, at least half the book.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, because for both Between the Lines and Off the Page, I was simultaneously writing one of my adult novels. So during Between the Lines, I was writing The Storyteller, which is about the Holocaust. And during Off the Page, I was writing the book that I'm working on now, which is about racism in America. So two very, very heavy, difficult topics. I can't lie and say it wasn't a relief to escape into a fairy tale every now and then. But in many ways, it felt like whiplash, too.
Oh, I can imagine. Well, one of the things that I really love about these books is that you're playing with the dynamic of books and readers and how
right.
strong that love can be.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the books you love the way Delilah loves this book?
When I was Delilah's age, even a little younger than Delilah, actually, I was obsessed with Gone with the Wind.
Ah.
And I honestly, it's been a very interesting thing for me to think about now, especially in light of a lot of the social justice workshops that I've done in preparation to write the book on racism that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 13, I just saw a love story between two star-crossed lovers. And I acted out the parts of both Rhett and Scarlett and used to deliver lines as both of them, which is also why I didn't have a boyfriend till I was 15, you know, but I just loved that book. And the reason I loved it was because Margaret Mitchell created a whole world out of words, and I felt it. I could smell it. I could see it. And I thought, well, maybe I could do that. And it was really the first time I ever considered being a writer. So that book has a great historical resonance for me personally. My mother, one of the first things she did when I learned how to read was take me to the library because she used to come home with a stack of books every week. And I knew that as soon as I learned how to write my name, I was going to be able to get a library card. That was a very exciting moment for me. So, you know, I've always been a great reader, and hopefully that's something I instilled in my kids as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say, this is an extraordinarily beautiful book. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about the care and attention that went into the making of Off the Page.
I would love to, because that's really special to me. When we first created Between the Lines, and then when we continued with Off the Page, it was very important to me to have this be a keepsake book, to be the kind of book that you might obsess over the way Delilah does. You want to pore over the illustrations. And for me, the seed of the idea came from being in an antiquarian bookshop when I was in England. And I was looking at the old J.M. Barrie books that were illustrated by Arthur Rackham. And all of these beautiful color plates. You can feel yourself in the story. And I thought, you know, how come we don't do that anymore? That, of course, is exactly what draws Delilah to Oliver in the first place. It's that image of him on page 43 by himself.
Mm-hmm.
That she stares at over and over and over and talks to. And I wanted there to be a meta level. I mean, you talked a little bit about how this really is about the relationship between a reader and a writer. And there's some of that, too, for the readers of this book. You are bringing these characters to life just as much as Delilah has brought Oliver to life.
Well, it's extraordinary to hold it and see the different colors of ink and different segments, the silhouettes,
really,
the full color illustration.
So pretty. Yeah. You know, I look at the book and I just go, oh, it's so pretty. You know, it's a great book to give as a gift, I think, because it is truly a beautiful piece of art in addition to being hopefully a great story.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I admire so much about you is that you've been such a great advocate for gender equality in literary matters.
You know, it's a really interesting thing when you are lucky enough to actually have a career as a writer and to be successful. I am so fortunate, and yes, I've worked very hard, but there are a lot of people who work hard who don't always get the readership that I think they deserve. And of course, by the same token, there are people who I think shouldn't have the readership that they get. And unfortunately, there tends to be a bias toward male authors. This is something that I happened to tweet about years ago when the New York Times reviewed a Jonathan Franzen book three times in 1 week in three different sections of the paper. And I just thought, wow, really? They just couldn't find another good book out there? And it must have been a very slow media day because everyone seemed to pick up on this one tweet that I sent. And, you know, I was not saying that Jonathan Franzen is not a good writer. He's a very skilled writer. I was saying there are a lot of other authors out there who deserve attention, and primarily women, because what we have learned since then is that the numbers were crunched by an organization called VIDA, V-I-D-A, and they did prove that, yes, they looked at all these different review outlets from the New York Times to the New Republic to the New Yorker, the London Review of Books, you name it. And they looked at not only what has been reviewed, but also who is doing the reviewing. And there's a wild disparity. There are far more male reviewers There are far more books written by males reviewed. And this year, for the first time, they crunched the numbers about women of color. And I can't even begin to tell you how depressing those statistics are.
I know.
I can't talk about them because I really get very upset. It's actually an embarrassment. And to me, as a successful woman, I really feel that there's a responsibility to being successful, to be able to reach down and pull somebody else up with you. And for my comfort levels, that's a lot of women who are standing there waiting for their moment in the sun. So whenever I can, I make sure to champion the work of female authors of color, female authors who are not getting the attention that I think they deserve, because there are lots of young white dudes from Brooklyn who are getting all the reviews right now.
Well, name some of them for us.
I'll give you a terrific example right now. My mentor from college is a woman named Mary Morris. She is one of the best writers I have ever read in my entire life. She has a new book out called The Jazz Palace that is extraordinary. It came out only about a month ago, so it's still selling, but it should be selling, I think, much higher than it is. And the reason it isn't is not because it's not good. It's because nobody knows it's out there. So I hope right now everyone in New Orleans runs out and buys a copy of The Jazz Palace, especially in New Orleans, because it's all about jazz in Chicago. There's got to be some resonance in the music scene with New Orleans, too. Yeah,
absolutely.
And, yeah, she's a great example of a writer who should be better read. Alice Hoffman is one of my all-time favorites. And, you know, again, she's someone who I think if you love her, you love her. But there are so many people who say, what's her name? I've never heard of her before.
Ah.
Again, another extraordinary writer.
We've been talking with Jodi Picco, whose new book, written with her daughter Samantha Van Leer, is off the page. You can meet them Thursday, May 28th at 6 o'clock at Temple Sinai. This is a ticketed event. Tickets are available at Octavia Books and will be exchanged for copies of Off the Page at the event. Check out OctaviaBooks.com for more information. Jodi, thank you so much.
Oh, it is my pleasure.
The Symphony Book Fair is a New Orleans tradition, and it's coming up May 29th through 31st. So we thought we'd talk to some of the folks who make sure it happens every year. My guests today are Heidi Charters, who's chaired the Book Fair for 2 years running and oversees the unique and collectible items, and also Linda Ferguson, who's been a volunteer with the Symphony Book Fair since 2003. Now, Heidi, being chair is a big, big job. So what made you get involved with the book fair?
Well, my mother took me to book fair, I believe, when it was over in Oakwood on the West Bank when I was a teenager. And so it was just always a tradition, and I love to read. And so I joined in as a volunteer a few years ago.
So you grew up with it. That's so wonderful.
Yes.
What about you, Linda?
I also started going long, long ago. I can remember my husband and I going the first year we were married, which was more than 50 years ago.
Wow. One of the things that I think people need to understand is that the work of the Symphony Book Fair goes on all year round. So tell us about how you prepare for the book fair, Heidi.
Well, people come in with boxes of books, and we go through them. It's kind of like Christmas Day, a treasure hunt, you know, you kind of go through and price them. And I'm afraid, you know, like if a new novel comes in, the volunteers squeal because, you know, who gets to read it first? But it's a little bit of a treasure hunt, particularly on the collectibles or rare books front. You know, you never know what someone might put in that box and might be something very special. And that's just fun.
So tell us about some of the things you have this year.
I guess our highest priced item is probably an 1818 first American edition of Samuel Johnson's Dictionary of the English Language.
Wow.
And that just showed up in a box. You know, somebody donated it to us. So that's probably our highest item. But we've got other fun things. We have a collection of Tarzan items.
People love Tarzan. That's so collectible.
And, you know, including comic books and old books and that kind of thing. We've got several boxes of those. And another special donation is a longtime science fiction collector's just personal collection. It includes hundreds of old vintage science fiction magazines with cool covers of rocket ships and, you know, girls being carried away by monsters. And it's really fun for me to look at the covers, and there they'll say, you know, new novel by, I don't know, Gordon Dixon or Isaac Asimov or something like that. And you can tell that these are from the 50s going on up. Some of these authors were just starting out, and this is how they were getting published, and that's fun.
And some of those have such a great vintage look. You know, you can just see what they are. It's so much fun.
Yeah, each decade, the artwork is so typical.
Now, Linda, you've really taken a look at this Tarzan collection, haven't you?
Oh, I have, and it's absolutely fascinating. We start with a first American edition of Tarzan of the Apes, and there are several different volumes that are the first American edition. And looking at these, I learned that ultimately Edgar Rice Burroughs started his own publishing company. So at the end, he was self-published. And his son, John, grew up and became an illustrator of the books. So the later volumes have illustrations by his son, John. And then as they republished, John illustrated new editions of the earlier books. And we also have some of Edgar Rice Burroughs' science fiction books. And again, some collectible editions of them.
Well, it's tempting to let out a Tarzan yell, but I'll restrain myself. What's the most unusual book you've ever seen? What would you pick?
I know one that was very unusual. It came in earlier in the year. It was published in New Orleans on Royal Street. That caught my eye. It was from just after the Civil War, pretty good shape, and it was the story of a doctor. It was his medical observations, like he'd been at the prison camps, I believe, in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd been from New Orleans, and when he came back from New Orleans, he wrote his memoirs. And, you know, he was so-and-so living on St. Charles Avenue, and he had his book published in New Orleans. And I didn't even know there were book publishers in New Orleans. So that might have been just plain old one of the most unusual that I've ever seen.
Yeah, a lot of booksellers were publishers then, which is so interesting to me, too, in our literary history. So one of the great things about this is that if you're a book lover, you get to do good and you get to support the symphony at the same time, isn't it?
That's right.
And how much money do you generally raise?
We try to give about $25,000 a year to the symphony. That's our minimum. But we're hoping to make more than that. But that's what we've committed to for this year.
And you also have other things besides books, we should say. You have sheet music, right?
Yes.
And art?
Yes, and we've got some really good vintage sheet music this year. Someone donated a whole bunch of Sheet Music magazine. And again, they go back to 1910, 1920. And they're all music, and they go through around the 1940s. And it was so much fun to kind of glance through that and see the type of music, how the fashions had changed. You know, like around the wartime, it's all these patriotic marches and things like that. So that might be very, very fun for a music buff to see those. And they're only a few dollars. They're very inexpensive.
A mere pittance. So beyond the special books, Heidi, what sorts of things do you hope people will find at the book fair?
Oh, I hope they come and just buy bags full of summer reading to take to the beach. They're very, very inexpensive, much cheaper than ebooks or that sort of thing, or your children's summer reading.
That too. Now, you also have one collection that I think is very special to a lot of New Orleans book lovers this year that comes from a longtime symphony volunteer, don't you?
Yes, that's Dr. Joseph Cohen, who was a literature professor at Tulane and I believe also did Jewish studies at Tulane.
Mm-hmm.
He taught at Tulane from late 50s, early 60s. I know I had him.
I did also.
You did too? Oh, how great.
And he was a volunteer. In fact, I think he did pricing on the rare and collectibles. But anyway, so he was just a longtime volunteer, and unfortunately he passed away this year, and his family did donate most of his collection to us.
Which he would be so pleased by. He is such a lovely man, and he's so proud of being a Symphony Book Fair volunteer.
Yes.
He really was.
And I guess I should add, he had his own little collectibles rare book business as well.
We've been talking with Heidi Charters, chair of the Symphony Book Fair, and volunteer Linda Ferguson. Thank you all so much. Thanks, Linda.
Oh, it's been a delight to be here.
And Heidi, keep up the good work.
Oh, well, thank you, and thanks for having us on.
It's a pleasure to welcome back Candace Huber of Tubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop to The Reading Life. You're coming up on a great anniversary.
That is true. 1 year. We make 1 year in September.
And that's a really impressive landmark. I noticed you celebrated the anniversary of getting the keys to the property
recently. I did, yes. That was back in April. I signed my lease starting May 1st. So that was my 1 year in the building. And then my 1 year of being open will be September 1st. So it's very exciting.
That's great. So tell me, I was reading your newsletter the other day, and this wonderfully titled summer program caught my eye, the League of Extraordinary Readers.
Yes.
So what are you doing with that?
So this is our superhero-themed book club summer reading group for kids and teens. We're breaking it up into three groups, 5th through 7th grade, 8th through 10th grade, and 11th and 12th grade. And anyone can sign up. It's free. It's open to the public. We're going to have the kids select their own books, and then we're going to bring them through 4 weeks of what we are going to call a training program where we teach them about plot and character and theme. We're going to have local authors come in and talk to them about how books are published and how books are made. We're going to teach them how to write a book review. And then at the end of the program, they're going to be donned extraordinary readers and honorary staff members at the bookstore with the ability to make staff recommendations for our staff shelf and also to write book reviews for the website. So it should be really exciting for kids, especially if they love books.
So what are some of the books you might suggest for this age?
For 5th through 7th grade, I suggest The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. It's a really great book for that age, really for any age, but for 5th through 7th grade.
He's good. One of your favorites.
He is definitely one of my favorites. So I think that one would be good. For some of the older kids, we're suggesting some of the newer books that are coming out. Of course, we really like fantasy and sci-fi. So things like A Court of Thorns and Roses, and also the Dorothy Must Die series, which is one of my favorites. So really, we're suggesting more fun books. We don't want them to feel like it's school or that they have to read a certain thing. And so we want them to really get into it and have fun with what they're reading.
Now, what does an honorary bookseller do?
An honorary bookseller is able to make staff recommendations. So we'll put their name on books that are on our staff recommendations shelf, and we'll label it from the League of Extraordinary Readers so that they can bring their friends and family in to see that they've actually made a recommendation. They can also write book reviews for the website. And if they want to, since this will be over with in July before they start school, we're going to afford them the opportunity to come and work for a day in the bookstore and help make recommendations to customers that come in as well.
You have charming booksellers in your store already, you know. So run through the dates for us and let us know what's what.
Sure. So for 5th through 7th grade, the deadline to sign up is May 31st. And that program will begin on Monday, June 8th, and it will go through Monday, June 29th. So it will be 4 Mondays from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. For 8th through 10th grade, that one, the deadline is June 14th. It begins Tuesday, June 23rd, and it will run through Tuesday, July 14th, every Tuesday for 4 weeks, again, 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. And finally, for 11th through 12th grade, that deadline is July 1st, and that program will run July 9th through the 28th on Thursdays from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. And you can sign up on the website.
And after the end of the training sessions, they're going to come up with literary superhero names, right?
That is correct. So they will be able to come up with their own literary superhero, either superhero or villain names, whatever they decide.
It's been a pleasure to talk with Candace Huber of Tubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop. This is your chance to join the League of Extraordinary Readers this summer. Visit tubbyandcoos.com, Coos is COOS, for more information. Candace, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Amy Connor signs Million Dollar Road Tuesday, May 26th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Deborah Harkness signs the paperback edition of her novel, The Book of Life, the final volume in her All Souls trilogy, Tuesday, May 26th at 7 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Muriel McHower, one of the very first residents of New Orleans' Lakeview neighborhood, discusses and signs Lakeview Memories, Tuesday, May 26th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Today's guest, best-selling author Jodi Picou and her daughter Samantha Van Leer, celebrate the publication of their new book, Off the Page, a companion volume to their previous bestseller, Between the Lines. That's Thursday, May 28th at 6 at Temple Sinai, St. Charles Avenue. This is a ticketed event, and tickets may be purchased online or in advance from Octavia Books. Each ticket will be exchanged for a book at the event. Poets Claire Harmon and Charles Garrett are the featured readers in the Blood Jet Poetry Series, Wednesday, May 27th at 8 at BJ's in the Bywater, 4301 Burgundy. Barb Johnson, author of More of This World or Maybe Another, is the featured reader at the Dogfish Reading Series, Thursday, May 28th at 7 at the North Villery Bakery, 2448 North Villery. The Birdfoot Festival marks the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina with Waterlines, curated by Elizabeth Gross, a series of events that explore the visible and invisible marks left by the storm and what these marks mean to us now as a community. There will be a reading featuring poets Peter Cooley, Gina Ferrara, Elizabeth Gross, Madeline Lesen, Jeff Munsterman, Brad Richard, Gian Smith, and Andy Young, Friday, May 29th at 6 at the Contemporary Arts Center. Barry Bronston signs Walking New Orleans, Saturday, May 30th from 11:30 to 1 at Maple Street Bookshop. Mark your calendar for the Symphony Book Fair, which takes place May 29th through 31st at the Human Performance Center at the University of New Orleans near the intersection of Robert E. Lee and Elysian Fields. Hours are Friday, May 29th from 9 to 8, with an admission charge until 5, Friday only. Saturday, May 30th from 9 to 8, and Sunday, May 31st from 9 to 4, with a special children's book sale Sunday from noon to 2. For more information, check out symphonyvolunteers.org. Sarah Pekkanen signs Things You Won't Say, Monday, June 1st at 6 at Octavia Books. And coming up soon, celebrate Bloomsday, June 16th, from 6 to 8 at the Irish House, 1432 St. Charles Avenue. The Loyola Writing Institute is offering a number of creative writing workshops to the community this summer. These non-credit evening workshops are open to aspiring writers of all ages and skill levels. Classes meet uptown on the Loyola campus, in the Marigny at the Healing Center, and in Bywater at Press Street headquarters. All classes are small and supportive, taught by experienced published writers, and capped at 12 participants. Classes for the summer are Elements of Fiction, taught by Tom Andes, starting June 4th, Writing the Screenplay with Mike Miley, Tuesdays and Thursdays, starting July 14th, Intermediate Fiction Writing, taught by Allison Alsop, which starts Tuesday, June 4th. Reading Like a Writer, taught by Jessica Kinnison, which meets Tuesday, June 1st through June 29th. Poetry for Everyone, taught by Anne-Marie Rooney, which begins June 2nd. Writing Creative Nonfiction, taught by C.W. Cannon, which meets Wednesdays beginning June 3rd. And Writing the Short Story, taught by Michael Jeffrey Lee, which begins July 14th. For more information and to register, go to loino.edu/WPC and look under Loyola Writing Institute. And a big shout out to University of New Orleans Professor Nii Osundari, who's being honored with the first ever Nii Osundari International Poetry Festival, which takes place May 26th through 27th at the University of Ibadan in Nigeria, where Osundari previously taught and received his undergraduate degree. Osundari, a poet, dramatist, and essayist, is one of Nigeria's most revered literary figures. Last year, he accepted the 2014 Nigerian Order of Merit Award, the nation's top prize in science, medicine, engineering, technology, and the humanities. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.